Cattle mutilations are something that have always fascinated me personally about the phenomena, among other things. But last year, I investigated one with our MICAT people in Fairplay, Colorado. And I can tell you that what I saw was not the act of predators. I can't say that it wasn't, you know, something to do with maybe human-caused, you know, like one of the popular explanations is satanic cult activity. I really highly doubt that, too, of course, because of the wounds. But anyway, 1981, up in a town called Briggsdale, which is in northeast Colorado, just a little bit north of the Greeley, Colorado area, there was a mutilation case that was investigated by a person whom I've talked to, and one of the reasons that this case is so fascinating to me is that the person that investigated the case has a science degree in physics, biology, and chemistry. She her name is Iona Heppner, and she's going to tell us tonight about this case and what was so bizarre about it, and I'm sure you're going to find it to be quite interesting, because historically, we're told that a lot of the wounds that are inflicted on the flesh of these animals are caused by high heat, and what Mrs. Heppner found will stun you. Good evening, Iona. Are you there?
Good evening. How are you?
Fine, thank you, and thank you for being on the program. This goes back to 1981 to, like I said, a town in Briggsdale where you were a science teacher. Tell us a little bit about how you came about becoming involved in the investigation of this particular cattle mutilation.
Well, one of my students indicated that they had found a dead calf on their ranch, and that the circumstances were unusual. So I gathered together my students, and we went out to look. The circumstances were indeed unusual.
Okay, in what way?
Well, initially, there was an unusual scene. There was no evidence of any kind of struggle, no evidence of a vehicle other than the rancher's vehicle who had driven out to inspect the animal.
Mm-hmm.
But whoever or whatever did the mutilation didn't leave any tracks. The terrain was undisturbed. Now, this is dryland prairie, and it's not difficult to see when you have had traffic, either vehicular traffic or foot traffic. So the first thing that was surprising was that the animal was mutilated, terribly mutilated in reproductive and rectal areas, in the fact that the tongue had been removed and various other things had happened to this animal, but there was no evidence of a struggle of any kind, no evidence the animal did any thrashing about.
Which is, I understand, kind of common when the animal is in the process of dying, is that correct?
That's true.
So this animal was just dropped or whatever, however it got there in this area.
It's as if he fell, it's as if that whatever fell out of the sky, did the dirty deed, and left.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Now, let's, before we get into the actual discussion of the animal itself, tell us about your background and, you know, your discussion degrees and that kind of thing.
Well, I'm a graduate of University of Southern Colorado, and I did work on my master's at Western State College in Gunnison, and then I have some additional work with the RMBL, Rocky Mountain Biological Laboratories, in Gothic, Colorado.
And your your background is quite in-depth in science, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, going back to the animal, how many days had it been lying there before you were able to get to it?
Apparently, it had been there one day.
Okay.
When I examined it.
Okay. Had anybody else been to the scene aside from the rancher before you arrived?
The rancher had been out, and I'm going to have to look back. It's been quite a while.
Sure, I understand.
To put things chronologically, let's see. Oh, yes. The sheriff's department had been out.
Okay.
Now, we saw their vehicular tracks. But they followed pretty much the same route as the rancher himself. And, again, they they surprised me in the fact that they didn't disturb the scene more than necessary. They had excised a triangular portion of the flesh, which included part of the mutilation cuts, if you will call them cuts. And other than that, I don't know what samples they took. They were unwilling to communicate with me. In fact, they've been very evasive throughout.
Okay, all right. Now, I do understand that the sheriff did make a comment that said basically that the underneath cut, that there was a 4-inch circle had been cut out of the calf's belly. He did state that it had not been touched by predators or insects. Is that correct?
That's true. However, that's a misquote. The cut was not in the calf's belly. It wasn't a calf. It was a heifer.
Okay.
The cut was in the rectal area, rectal-vaginal area. In fact, the entire rectum and vagina had been removed.
Completely. Yeah. Okay. Now, you arrived on the scene, and I understand that you did take some samples. Describe that.
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. Can you describe that?
Well, in essence, I'd like to mention to you what I discovered that was unique, and then that explains why I took the samples I did.
Okay. All right,
there was a transparent fluid that had a maroonish tinge to it. There was no blood in or about this animal.
Okay.
I tried, in fact, to extract a blood sample and was unable with my syringe to withdraw any blood from any vessels. I actually, there's an excerpt from Extraterrestrials Among Us, and he's misquoted some of it, and he hasn't got quite everything down, but I did try the carotid artery, which you would anticipate finding perhaps even coagulated blood. There was absolutely nothing except this clearish, maroon-tinged fluid.
Now,
there was some of this fluid on the ground. Now, the fluid was thin, but it was not absorbed into the ground.
So it was basically just staying on the top of it. Like,
yes.
Uh-huh. Now, in your experience, Iona, with your background in science, that in and of itself is highly unusual, isn't it?
Extremely.
Okay. What did you think you were dealing with, at least just, you know, immediate impression when you, you know, I understand that it's impossible to completely drain the animal of blood, and considering that this animal had these gaping wounds in it, wouldn't we expect to see blood in those areas?
You would expect to see blood in any kind of, a normal, say, if we were talking a satanic cult that came in there and wanted organs for some kind of strange rite, they would not have used the care. It was so evident when I first saw the animal. I approached the animal from the rear, so to speak, and you could see this gaping, very precise circular hole.
Okay.
With no blood or leakage of body fluids of any kind. There was no serum leakage. You would expect to find that.
Absolutely clean.
Absolutely clean. No odor, no evidence of insects or anything else on this carcass.
Okay. I'm going to continue with my guest, Iona Heppner. Iona is has a scientific background, and probably what makes this another interesting aspect of this case is that as a witness, she applied her scientific training to the study of these samples. And we're talking about a cattle mutilation that occurred in 1981 in the Briggsdale, Colorado area, which has some very bizarre features to it. Our call-in talk line is 1-800-836-2009, 1-800-UFO-2009. We want to hear from you, so give us a call. Iona, now, we're still out in the field now with the animal, and you've attempted to take a blood sample. There's no blood in the area. What happens next?
Well, in essence, I was accompanied by my students and directed them in technique to... and this was not their first necroscopy.
Okay.
I believe in a lot of hands-on. So we had studied numerous animals who had, and some in the field who had different demises and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew about techniques so that we would not contaminate our samples. We collected some of the fluid that was on the ground, and I had been able to extract approximately 5 cc's of this fluid from the carotid artery.
Which is a very small amount, right?
Very.
Maybe a tablespoon?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't do tablespoons very well.
Okay.
But in essence, we collected samples of the unknown fluid. We collected tissue samples. And we excised a portion of the vaginal rectal area that had been, there was approximately 4 or so inches in diameter, circular cut made by whoever, the mutilators.
Mm-hmm.
And then a little triangular portion had been cut away by the sheriff that
okay.
included some of the original incision.
Right.
So I included in my incision, my sample included part of the sheriff's cut and part of the original incision because there was a unique difference between the two even one day after.
Just visually looking at it then, right?
Just looking at it. The portion that had been cut away by the sheriff had already turned brown and the tissue was drying.
Now, is that... Okay, now that I take then is a normal effect, is that correct?
That would be expected, yes.
Okay, so where the sheriff made the cut, the tissue was turning brown and was drying, but this...
Right, now
this,
the areas where the other incision was a pinkish white.
Okay.
Very clean and clear, not dried, not leaking serum at all, but
okay.
It was... more or less covered with the maroonish liquid, and it looked completely fresh.
Okay. Now, before we go to the lab now to do the study on the samples, were there any other unusual things that you discovered on the animal's carcass? I noted in the notes here that you found 2 bloodless puncture wounds in the calf's throat, or I keep calling it a calf, in the heifer's throat.
Yes.
Any kind of an explanation as to what that could what could have caused that?
Well, it certainly wasn't a predator bite
okay.
of any sort.
So like, it wouldn't be like a snake bite or anything.
It would be like a cannula had been inserted there, and perhaps that was the point of exit for the blood and entrance for the what I think of is a sort of a preservative fluid of some kind.
Okay. All right. A cannula, just for our listeners, is that some type of a device that they can use to extract fluids or something?
Well, in essence, think of it as a big needle.
Okay. Okay. All right. Now then, let's go to the lab. What happened at the lab?
Well, I went to the lab, and I was there till approximately midnight preparing the samples. Well, the students came back with me early in the day, and we prepared some culture medium and wanted to culture the unknown fluid. And we took some of the cells. We had taken cell samples from the inside of the mouth and various places back in the throat.
Okay.
Because, remember, the tongue had been completely... cut out in the same manner as the rectum and vaginal cuts were made.
Okay.
So we took samples of this and then prepared our culture medium and put them in the incubator to see what might grow. Again, I was impressed with the fact that we didn't seem to have any flies or other insects. I mean, even on a living animal, they attract flies.
Sure, sure.
And there was a distinctive absence. I prepared some stained slides of the area of the cut, of the incision in the back of the animal, and then some of the area where the sheriff had made his incision. And some of the specimens from the inside of the mouth and so forth. So we had various staining applied to the slides without getting real technical. Things that would show up different areas of the cell to find out what was going on and so forth.
Okay.
And I examined these. Now, in the printout in the book here, he's got things kind of out of sequence, but when I examined these was that evening. Under the microscope, this fluid appeared to have rectangular bodies in it. Very small, maybe 5 microns by 3 or something of that sort. Microns are extremely small.
Okay.
And then some small crystals. Now, the rectangular bodies were somewhat maroonish in color. Now, this was looking at it unstained. And the crystals were clear.
So
I don't know whether the crystals were always evident because when I later examined it, there were more crystals than the first observation. I just couldn't seem to tear myself away from these slides I had prepared for two reasons. One, this unknown substance just did not resemble anything. It was non-organic. And that means it did not contain, it contained no carbon. It was never any part of a living being. I did not have instrumentation and sophistication in my high school science lab to do a complete study such as you might have done through mass spectroscopy or something to tell exactly what was this fluid.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing, and I don't know, do you want to discuss that further before we talk about the incision area itself?
He has a science background, quite an impressive background, by the way, and you folks are hearing something probably that's maybe unprecedented so far in cattle mutilation research, is that this person, Mrs. Heppner, has a very elaborate scientific background and has applied that to the study of these samples. Now, when we went to break, Iona, you were talking about there was something else you wanted to mention about the unusual bodies that were found in the fluid. Do you want to finish that off?
Well, in essence, I could not, it wasn't so much about the bodies. I think that the crystals were forming as a natural process, probably like crystals form in sugar water.
Okay. All right.
That doesn't mean they're living and multiplying or anything. In fact, this was not organic at all. It was not, nor never had been, a living substance.
Yeah, but you were totally unable to identify what it was, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Also, there was no bacterial growth. None whatsoever.
Now, is that unusual?
Well, considering the fact that it came from in and around a very highly bacterial environment, such as the inside of an animal who has been deceased at least 24 hours when I saw it.
You'd find something.
And laying on the ground, I took samples both from the ground and from the carcass.
So there was no bacterial growth in
anything. No bacterial growth, and the same thing was true on the surface of the cut that included what I think was more of this same liquid.
Okay.
So it's a highly unique substance of which I'm really unaware. Odorless, there was only a slight maroonish tinge to it, but it was thinner than water. The third thing about it is it was not absorbed into the loose soil.
Okay.
There was a pool of it near the rectal area on the ground. It took 2 weeks for that to absorb into the soil.
Okay.
I went out there and applied different liquid substances, including thick mineral oil, and the mineral oil was absorbed well before this unknown, which was a much thinner consistency. It was a thinner consistency than blood.
Okay, now
very watery.
Tell us about the incision.
The incision, perhaps, was the most striking thing of all, because this was not a laser cut.
Okay.
This had not been produced by any, there was no heat formation or evidence of any heat application or a laser kind of cut. It was certainly not a rip or tear such as you would find in a predator situation. It was extremely precise and clean. Under the microscope, the cells were not disrupted by the incision. what that means is, as you know, we are made up of cells, and if we are incised, no matter how sharp the scalpel, some cells will be cut. Some cells will be disrupted, and you will have cell fragments along that incision.
And laser cuts will still disrupt cells too as well, right?
Yes.
Okay. So
this was as if the cells had actually been separated along their natural boundaries, their cell membrane.
Now, let me ask you this real quick. In your background, is there anything that you can attribute that kind of a cut to? What kind of an instrument that could have make a cut like that?
Absolutely not. Not that, you know, we have microtomes and we have microscopic surgery and all kinds of very elaborate equipment now, and there's nothing of which I am aware.
Okay.
And that doesn't mean it couldn't exist. Obviously, it does exist somewhere.
Okay.
I have not been willing to be overly communicative about this whole affair simply because I didn't want to attract crackpots.
I understand, sure.
And I have to compliment you. I know that you contacted me. It's been quite some time ago that we have discussed several times the situation, and I'm impressed with the fact that your approach is rational, scientific, and willing to approach this with an open mind, not trying to make a sensationalism kind of thing out of it.
Well, thank you.
But...
Now, I will go to the part now where what happens to these samples?
Well, I was extremely excited, and I wound up staying in the lab till about midnight. At about that, just before midnight, my husband, who also taught there, and our coach, an athletic director, came over, and of course, this was a tiny town, and the whole community was quite interested in what was going on. But it was just before midnight they came, and I secured the lab. We locked the door, as we always do,
mm-hmm.
and they closed the windows and actually locked the door, and we left. The next morning, the lab door was found open, in fact, before I got to school by another employee, and there was materials strewn on the floor. Every sample was missing except one tissue sample that was in the freezer.
Okay. And now we're going to have to get going here a little bit faster because we're running out of time.
Right.
Now what happens next?
Well, in essence, the principal did not want me to report it. I did call the sheriff's department, and I'm not sure now whether it was right at that time. I had sent some samples up to CSU.
Okay. Colorado State University.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
In Fort Collins, they have a school of veterinary medicine there. Later, no one could seem to find them. In essence, nothing was ever done about that. I went back out to the scene, gathered more samples, and then created some dummy samples, which I placed pretty much as I had done the original one.
Mm-hmm.
Yet I hid some of the, you know, I hid the ones that... my real ones, so to speak, but they weren't the same anymore, obviously.
Okay.
And the next morning, with no evidence of break-in, the dummy samples were gone.
Oh, boy. We got to go take a call real quick. Bob from California, line 3. Go ahead, Bob.
Bob? Yes, Ms. Heppner?
Yes.
Yes, I investigated a case in outside of Las Vegas on the Frank Martin Ranch where a steer was mutilated, and the veterinarian Lamb noted that the laboratory that analyzed some of the tissue would say orally a certain result, but not give a report in writing because they didn't want to commit themselves. And basically what they said was that they found a trace amount of a drug that cross-reacts with epinephrine or norepinephrine.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know whether that's significant or not or whether that relates in any way to this maroonish fluid which you found, which you said was non-organic. Also, I have one other question. Perhaps you could answer that and this one, too, and I'll get off the line. I'm wondering what kind and power of microscope, what power of lenses were used in examining the cells.
What did you say?
He was asking, Anna, what power lenses you were using in the microscope. Do you recall?
Boy, I would have to go back and look at my notes and tell you the exact power we had.
Generally, what would that require?
What would it require to see the cells?
Yes.
Oh, most any...
10 power?
Basically, the high school lab kind of microscopes, we're not looking at usually an eyepiece of around 15x and... high power objective of approximately 60.
Okay. We're going to have to go to...
Just fine.
Iona, we had a call off the air. The person wanted to know, what organs would, say, satanic cults go after? And would that, you know, if they were making the cut, what would it look like? Would it look different than this?
Well, in essence, I'm not an expert on satanic cultism. However,
if it was just a cut that was made by, say, a human being that
a human being with normal access to materials, and I'm not talking about someone who's deprived of money, because as literature points out, frequently Satanists do have at their disposal a considerable amount of funds. But the technology involved would have to be extreme. If you would have a normal incision, even a rather expert surgical incision, you would see something quite different than what is appearing in the cattle mutilations, not just mine, but others I've read about.
Okay. Now, bottom line here for you, with your background and you know, the training that you've had, what do you feel that you dealt with? What do you think this, what do you ascribe this to?
Well, I tend to be a person who hates to speculate.
Okay.
But in essence, it, in my mind, has to be one of two different things. Either it has to be an earthly phenomenon fostered by a group that would have extreme technology that it is not yet sharing with the mainline scientific community, and who is doing some kind of covert research, which seems unlikely because there are a lot easier ways attracting much less attention. They could just buy cattle from the areas they wanted to study.
I have to agree with you. That would be the first thing, not being detected.
Right. It seems rather bizarre that you would have that kind of sophistication and then be out rummaging around in ranchers' pastures looking for an unsuspecting heifer. The other option could be extraterrestrials. I don't discount that idea. I certainly am not into sensationalism about it, nor do I want to be. I think that if we consider...
we want to get some answers. You know, that's what we want, answers.
Right.
Solid
we have
answers.
To approach it scientifically and rationally, or what we're going to get is a lot of tabloid magazine stuff.
Okay. I know we got to wrap it up. I want to thank you very much for appearing on our program, and you've imparted some very good information. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And for our listeners, thank you for joining us tonight. We'll see you next week, same time, right here on the Paranet UFO Continuum. I'm Michael Corbin, reminding you to keep your eyes on the skies. Good night.